Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and happy late St. Patrick's Day. We are here doing a commentary watch on one of my favorite Irish-themed movies. And along with me, of course, is my girl, Nadia, otherwise known as Miss Rachel. Hello, Miss Rachel.
And today, for post-St. Patrick's Day, I will let you guys know that I got a good bit of the Irish in me. So if you knew my real last name, you would understand completely. Let's just say it's got a whole lot of big C's and little C's and double underlines. And yeah, you almost can't say it without an accent. So I feel especially akin to being able to say on St. Patrick's Day, fuck you guys, I'm the original leprechaun, because I used to be a very tiny, waifishly thin, redheaded child, and yes, my, quote, friends used to chase me around the playground asking for my lucky charms, so there's that.
And I'm so glad you give your lucky charms here on Deviant Legion. I'm very happy about that, my dear. Today we are doing a commentary watch on one of my favorite films. And one of my favorite filmmakers, and that would be John Sayles and his family fantasy, The Secret of Roan Inish. Just so you know, that Roan Inish is a real island off of Ireland, and you will just be amazed at the cinematography and the whole place. I mean, it's just amazing. This is a quiet film. And it is a film that is full of story and storytelling, and that all has to do with the Irish lore of the Selkies, and we'll get into that as we watch the movie. The movie is available on Amazon Prime for free, so go to Amazon Prime, put in The Secret of Roan Inish, and that's R-O-A-N, and then separate word Inish, I-N-I-S-H. And you shall find it. So, Miss Rachel, are you ready to go on this?
2 seconds.
So, basically, we're set at 000, and it's right before the Samuel Goldwyn blue screen.
Sorry. I don't have an inhaler right now. My coughing fits have been getting a little... extra lately.
Understood.
Anyway.
I've got sinus too. So yeah, it's a lovely thing.
All right. Well, I am set up and ready to go.
Okay. So I do have to say that you have not seen this movie before.
I may have. It seems really familiar. And I grew up watching weird foreign family flicks like this, like, you know, the Littlest Viking and the Reluctant Dragon and stuff like that. So I can't say I haven't seen it.
Okay.
But I can say that if I have seen it, I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And
okay.
It's
well,
definitely been a while.
Yeah. So we are now at Amazon. I'm going to say 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, then go, and we start on go. All right?
Okay.
You ready?
Ready.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
And so, yeah, this is, I was going to mention, you know, a little off from our normal fare in that it is a family and child-friendly flick, you know. I think that I will most likely keep my mouth as such on this one so that, you know, other people's children can watch it. Mine don't care. My 13-year-old cousin's like a sailor at the house, so. but only at home. They know when it's appropriate and when it's not. So, yes, I've been kind of excited about this one. We were supposed to do it earlier this week, and unfortunately, I had some health problems. I've been having some as yet undiagnosed health issues, so I genuinely apologize.
So this was digitally restored by UCLA? And so you're going through all this right now. This was a 1994 film. I saw this actually on VHS for the first time. And as I said, the cinematography and just everything about this is just gorgeous.
Well, you know how I feel about it. Like, I think a lot of times the fucking scenery can be its own character in a film. And pretty much anything that's ever been filmed in Norway, especially, like, Jesus Christ, Finland, Norway, Iceland, all that.
Yeah.
Gimme.
Ireland, too. This has its own feel of the scenery. The music is by Mason Daring, and Mason is basically John Sayles' go-to guy. And one of the things I do want to mention right at the beginning is I love this score. He takes a lot of traditional Irish music and arranges it, and it's just absolutely beautiful. And also, cinematography by Haskell Wexler, who was a great cinematographer and directed probably my favorite film of the 1960s, which is Medium Cool.
Yeah, we were just talking about that film the other day. You were showing me some scenes from it that were fucking fantastic, and I think we're going to be doing possibly a show
we're gonna be
on
doing
one
something
of the actors
on
that. In that film.
I'm waiting until Robert Walker has a little bit of time. We're waiting for another week or so before we schedule. Now, as we start this first scene, I should mention, there is our protagonist. And is she not gorgeous? Just a lovely girl.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, and I love all the, you know, Gaelic crosses and stuff in the cemetery. Wait, no, that's a graveyard. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, there is a difference.
One of the things is this is structured in terms of memory and story. So a lot of things are not in chronological order, and you have to realize that.
I'm sure we'll figure it out. Where's Father?
Well, this young lady, this is her only film credit. She reminds me a lot of a young Sarah Pollock, who was in The Adventures
Baron von Munchausen?
Yes, thank you. Baron von Munchausen.
Yeah.
Going to find her father at the pub.
Boy, don't we all know what that's like? Oh, wait.
Well,
no,
I warned you about
me.
A couple things. I did, didn't I?
It's funny that we were just talking about this like yesterday, completely unrelated to the movie. And yes, Carl, you will understand this, but there was a reason certain bars in Little Rock kept a little half gallon of milk behind the bar. And it wasn't to make mixed drinks.
No.
Birds.
Isn't that crazy? I go around here.
Birds are assholes. Okay, so I'm confused. Like, you sound like you're far off from me. Like, I'm seeing seals in a boat.
Where are you time-wise? I'm at 5:52.
Let me see. Where's that remote? There's my remote. Let's see what we're at. Yeah,
no,
I'm at like 6:35.
Okay.
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 I'm pausing, so just tell me when you get to 6:40 and I'll start.
Okay. Okay, you saw the seal, right? I'm at the seal now.
Yes, tell me when you get to 6:40.
I'm almost there. Another 15 seconds. By the way, the seal is very important.
I assume. It's called the Secret of Roninish, the island
of
the seal.
I'm at 6:40.
There we go. Got a little tag on and everything.
Listen to that music.
Oh, yeah, I grew up on that music.
Now, wouldn't you want to just, like, hang out with Grandpa and Grandma? Seriously. So let's talk a little bit about John Sayles. John Sayles is a great director, and he was a writer of both screenplays and also, of course, novels. First film was Brother from Another Planet. I remember seeing that in the 80s and just falling in love with that movie. But he talks about, you know, what people go through and different class structures and things like that. So this is not too far off in terms of what he talks about. Now, this particular piece is based on the 1957 novel, which is The Secret of Ron More Scary by Rosalie Fry. But he did this, and I love this movie. So any thoughts so far?
Well, I mean, so far it's just the beginning of a typical, you know, story movie. Not a whole bunch going on yet.
Here. You remember him, Fiona? What's the name of him? Uncle Pat 6-5.
Leave me back to the West. Please.
Oh, yes, I'm well pleased. How come you never left with your family?
Tried for a month, then I ran back here.
Pretty loud back there, Carl.
Is it loud?
It is. Like, I can hear everything you're
saying.
Okay,
hold on. We can do something about this.
I think you're in an echoey room, honestly. Now, if we want to talk about beautiful kids, by the way, that little boy right there would have been enough to get my little girl heart a-fluttering. I'm looking at that like damn. You know, I don't want to be that creepy lady that's, like, making jokes about when he turns legal, but, hey, I can say it now because I know that whatever this guy is, he's definitely of age now, so.
Oh, easily. This is 30 years ago.
Yeah, I know.
Just look at that. It's just gorgeous. And, it's, you know, I mean, so what do you know about Selkies?
I know that, weirdly enough, you know that wedding I went to on Halloween last year? Not last
yes.
year, but, like, they just celebrated their first
ago.
Year anniversary. Yeah,
right.
I went to a wedding on Halloween where everybody was dressing up. And part of that is because a major part of their ceremony involves the fact that they had a running thing in their relationship involving Selkie lore. And
mm-hmm.
so he actually gifted her with a fur mantle, like a vintage fur stole. And gave her her Selkie skin because he wanted to be with her for forever, but never was he going to, you know, keep her from her freedom. And, like, it was one of the most beautiful things ever. But, yeah, I know a bit about Selkie lore, especially because if I didn't at that wedding, they broke down and explained it for everybody.
Uh-huh.
Which is
so
that, you know,
you
Selkies are basically...
So here you have one of the students that's being ejected because he will only speak Irish.
Yes, and this really did happen to people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people don't realize how fucked up things were back then, especially in places like Ireland.
Was this set in, originally in 1946, so it's right after the war, and it's still they're still fighting for their independence. They still want their independence. Now, if this were remade, could you see Brendan Gleeson as the grandfather? Without a doubt.
100%, absolutely.
And that I'm pretty sure that's McLally. Let me make sure. Yeah, that is McLally. He then didn't do a lot of acting. Oh, no, that is not McLally. Excuse me. Again, it's about these stories, and the one thing I love about this is about how it's adapted in terms that in the novel and in the movie, it is about the tales. They don't try to connect everything. You have to work at this a little bit.
And I've always liked these, like, storytelling adventures and it's not necessarily like adventurous, like, you know, Alibaba and the 40 Thieves or all that, but
right.
Fantastical tales of.
Yeah, this is much more reserved. It's quiet. And I like that about this film.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm amazed at this is the training of the SEALs. Okay, and there's a number of SEAL trainers in the credits. But as you watch movie, be amazed at what they do for the camera.
SEALs are highly intelligent and highly trainable.
Oh, yeah.
And so fucking cute, but God, people don't realize how massive and deadly they are.
No, they are. By the way, that is McLowey. I was wrong.
Oh. You, the almighty Carl?
Yeah.
You were.
Yeah,
you were,
I'm not perfect.
What was that? Wrong?
Yeah. Yes.
With my ears?
I admit I'm wrong. Steve doesn't admit that he's wrong, but I do.
Mary at the foot and Bridget at the head. See, a lot of people back in this point were still trying to hold on to their older religions while being in a mandatorily Catholic country. Like, you had to be fucking Catholic. So a lot of these people, and, you know, I don't want to say indigenous folk, but they basically are the indigenous people of these islands, didn't exactly want to give up their old ways. They didn't ask for these, you know, Christians to come in and take over.
No.
And that's actually one of the really interesting points that Neil Gaiman writes about a lot in, like, American Gods and Anansi Boys and fucking Norse mythology, about how these gods aren't as powerful anymore because, you know, people were forced to stop believing, and eventually they really just kind of did. Which begs the other question, you know, how faithful were you really if it was that easy to, you know, not have your faith anymore?
So let me ask you this. Do you think you could live like this in terms of on a farm and you have to do things and so on and so forth? There's something truly beautiful about it. But to be honest, I'm not sure I could do this.
I think I could.
Without shoes, by the way, notice.
And just so everybody knows, our movie snack for tonight is a bag of Jolly Time cheddar cheese popcorn. I'm trying this for the first time, and it is fucking amazing.
By the way,
maybe I should dip it in some of whatever that is.
My movie snack is something you provided for me.
Ooh.
And that would be pork rinds.
Yep. You're welcome.
Oh, I love, you know how much I love pork rinds.
Yeah, I know.
No, my
I introduced you to really good
girl.
Ones.
Oh, yeah, they both are. My brother actually married a girl, Dark, at Bradford. They had a a farm. Basically, they raised cows and pigs and dairy farm.
My mama grew up on a farm. And I think it was a dairy farm.
Now, I have to say also one of our major contributors to the podcast, Miss Vicki Love and I were talking yesterday, and she actually watched this movie last night. And we were talking about it this morning.
Wow. So my five-year-old has been sitting here very quietly watching this and munching on their cheddar popcorn that I keep stealing. Thank God I have a whole box of it because we're going to have to make another bag. And she just looked up while he was talking to the kid and goes, I think that grandpa is going to die in this movie, and then she's going to be all alone.
You could tell her no.
Okay,
spoiler.
Good. No, grandpa doesn't die. Does grandma die? Because that's where I was going. Oh my God, grandma's a sulky. That's it.
You're close, not there. You're close. By the way, all the seagulls are trained also.
Very Hitchcocky in here.
Oh, yeah. Imagine running across rocks in your bare feet.
Well, I mean, I did tell you about my mom's story about we had to chase Granny all up and down the side of that mountain to get those shoes back.
I love your mom.
Oh, I do too. God bless that woman. Oh, and by the way, seagulls are like the vultures of water.
Oh, yeah.
They are the fucking
nasty shit birds. Mine. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Very much like that. I love watching those videos where people get like instant karma because they've got food on the boardwalk and they decide to be bastards to the fucking seagulls. And then they get, you know, instant karma. Seagull snatches their food and pecks their wife's eyeballs out. Like, I keep seeing the seagulls here, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, they're seriously, like, they're tracking on something if they're gathering like that.
Well, they're working with the
seagulls.
Can we
just say that is a beautiful, whatever the fuck that is, bassinet? I don't know. I'm a mom.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that thing's supposed to be called.
I think a bassinet.
Well, I mean, I had a bassinet, and that was the thing that was like a tiny crib, like basically one of those things on legs, and it had a little canopy over it or whatever. But, yeah, I have no idea. Of course, I'm a bit of a Luddite when it comes to things anyway, so... Even baskets like that were unnecessary for me because as long as I had, like, a towel or a blanket or something, my baby could be held. Strapped
right
on to me, whatever. But...
By the way, that's an important line. They were angry at us for leaving Ronin-ish. Just keep that in mind.
cows could have wings.
Yeah, my grandmother used to say pigs could fly, but same thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was just going to say.
I love how he's shooting them between the net.
Oh, yeah. I think that is fantastic because normally that would cause, like, some weird shadows and stuff, but it's looking very pretty.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, the cinematography is just fantastic. And this is a beautiful print. They did a 4D restoration of this.
Wow, yeah.
Gorgeous.
I was going to mention that. Like, I'm not used to movies this old being this pretty.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would love to do that. Row a boat.
Rowing.
You know, like that, and just take it easy and get to the place you're going and go back. That's very cool. And look at seals, man.
Oh, God, I know. I just think seals are fantastic. Oh, look at the fat blubber.
Now, I actually like otters. Seals are cool, too.
Oh, otters are the best. You know that otters hold hands while they're sleeping so they don't drift apart?
Yep.
And yes, I am loving the costuming. It's very basic, very simple. And sometimes that's all you need. But, like, the way his hat aged and, you know, like, right there on that front brim part, which is the part that gets the most damage and stuff, like, it's coming apart and, yeah, like...
And again, I have to really talk about the music.
Well, of course.
You know, Mason Daring, the nice thing about John Sayles, he did a number of films. He did Honey Dripper, which was about early 50s blues in the black community. He did The Brother from Another Planet, black themed music from the 70s. He did this film. He did... Lone Star, which is a Western. And Mason Daring did all these scores, and he adapted traditional music, much in the same terms that Ry Cooder did. And he's very underrated as an arranger and a composer. The most interesting thing that Mason Daring composed, the theme to 60 Minutes.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like a perfect theme song.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not like my jam. I'm not going to put it on repeat for house cleaning day or anything, but...
No.
I mean, come on. Like, if you think of iconic music, that's definitely in the top.
Oh, absolutely. This is where they used to live when they were on the island. And again, these buildings are actual buildings. They did not, you know, they found...
Oh, yeah,
they
no, this is definitely not a set.
No, this is not a set.
On the floor and stuff. God, it's
I mean, they're
so
set
pretty.
Dresses, but they're not...
I mean, like, even just stuff like this, it's beautiful. Just, like, so rustic and so wonderful. And no, I do not understand why people see things like this and suddenly decide that that's how they want to decorate their house or anything. But, you know, that whole, like, rustic beachside cottage look where it's all fucking distressed driftwood and random
yeah.
tacky seashells. Yeah, I don't get that, but... I definitely get the beauty. Like, I want to go take so many pictures of buildings like this. Inside, outside, dilapidated, restored, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to live there. But that's cool. Like, I like my modern amenities. I can, like, rough it camping, but I'm more of a glamper. So I'm not going to pay a couple hundred bucks to Airbnb to go live in a rustic cottage like that for a week. I mean, I can do that on my own in the woods if I feel like it for free.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just being near to a shoreline.
So we talked a little bit before the show, and so Fiona here. Do you feel any affinity toward her? Because I think I could see you being very young and being her.
Yeah. I kind of do. It's weird for me because, you know, the wandering off kind of by myself and doing things, that's totally more me. Like I said, I didn't really know or have any sort of relationship with my grandparents growing up. I didn't have a relationship with any of my grandparents until I was like 12 or 13 years old, and that was my step-grandparents. So I didn't know them until I was that age. But so I don't have that kind of connection with her. But the liking of the storytelling and the kind of fantasy thing here is, yeah, that's a total
Rachel
vibe.
Also, that she's very, very independent.
Oh, yeah.
She
I
goes
was
off
the most
on herself.
Independent.
No.
Well, I mean,
and
I was an only
she's
child.
She's not
I was,
afraid of anything. And I can see you
yeah,
not being
was,
afraid of anything.
Oh, I wasn't, you know. I was the one bringing snakes home in my dress pockets and, you know, handing my mom frogs and giving park rangers heart attacks. I actually inadvertently made a national park ranger retire. He quit because of me. But,
you'll have to tell me that story sometime. I want
oh,
to hear
I will.
That.
My mom will gladly tell it to you. She loves that one. It's actually multiple stories all rolled into one and ends with me popping out of the car. My friend pops out of the car first and goes, ta-da! And I jump out of the car behind her and go, ta-da! And he just looks at both of us and he looks at my mom and he goes, I'm sorry, Peggy. I fucking quit. And he threw his hat down and walked away. It was like a movie moment. So, yeah, we'll talk about that later. Yeah, so far I am feeling like a little bit, you know, I get this girl.
Yeah.
You know, she's quiet, she's polite, she does her damn thing, wanders off on her own, fantasizes about the world, just, yeah.
Yeah, And by the way, we haven't talked much about Grandma, but I like Grandma too.
Well, yeah.
She's more sad at losing Jamie.
Yeah. I mean, so far everybody in this movie is, you know, a pretty well likable character.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of like that. There doesn't always have to be just like a blatant bad guy. Now, of course,
there's a couple
Yeah, I mean, of course, they're being like religiously oppressed and they're not in a great time, just time period in history at all. So, I mean, honestly, there's obviously going to be some bad guys, but I don't see this as like some great overarching, you know, really bad evil guy kind of story.
No. Now, you will find a couple of characters that are a little perhaps scary at first.
More of a Big Fish kind of thing. Like, I'm getting Big Fish vibes from this. The whole storytelling.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, like, Burton probably took from this here, because I can see this being a Burton film, like one that he would enjoy. Because I think he secretly just really, really does enjoy family films. He just likes to make them weird.
Yeah, but he wants it twisted. And
but that love has to come from somewhere, and it probably came from movies like this.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really does. I mean, it's the elderly man telling the stories, the fantastical stories, to the interested young woman. And ultimately, you know, we're going to see that things in real life actually do correlate to these stories. And I'm guessing there's going to be the whole question of, well, was it true or was it fiction all along? You know.
So, of course, they talk about the dark ones. And, of course, they're not talking about dark and that they're evil. They're talking about their hair color and their complexion. But, of course, they're also their attitude is different. And this I really like. I like this conversation here.
Well, and I really think that, you know, a lot of this is just interesting in its simplicity so far.
Mm-hmm. She's not easily frightened.
Nope. She's just like, all right, buddy, keep it on. I'm more scared of the dude that keeps stabbing the table.
Well, that's who we're talking about. That's Tag. He's a dark one.
Well, yeah.
And now we go into a story, and this is where the fantasy really begins.
Yeah. I mean, if this isn't just, like, creepy as shit, it's like reverse werewolfing or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Except she's peeling off creepy fish skin and he's peeling off his clothes. All right, creepster.
But the story is, you'll see what he does.
I'm seeing. Is he going to steal her silky skin?
That's the whole point. If you get a silky skin, you have control.
And they remain in human form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of stories about silkies. And like one interesting, you know, there was this whole story about basically these strippers that were actually silkies, and the guy was keeping their skins locked in a safe in the strip club. Because obviously, you know, when silkies turn into human form, part of it is the fact that they're fucking gorgeous. Did we see that girl?
Yep.
Jesus. Anyway, panting over here.
And by the way, she is gorgeous.
This movie is fantastic, Carl. And again, I still don't remember if I've seen it before or not, but it feels so familiar, and I don't know if it's because the stories are familiar or if the movie is. Does that make sense?
Right. No, that makes sense.
Because these are very traditional, you know, Irish stories. And so... I don't know, honestly. I can't tell you, but either way, this was a total win of a pick so far. It's rare that we do movies quite as slow as this.
But it's not boring at all. Okay?
Oh, no,
it's
I didn't say boring.
Pace.
I just said slow.
No. You know, I mean, most people... Oh, a movie's slow, it's boring. This is not boring at all. A lot of that has to do with the story itself and the stories contained wherein, but also the cinematography, just everything about, and it's odd. It's not, it's unusual, right? You don't see this. You don't see... this type of scenery and everything.
And pacing and kind of, yeah, you don't see that. And that's one of the things that's so far very interesting about this movie is that you don't see a lot of this. Now, I will say that being someone who, again, grew up watching foreign family films, you see it a lot more in that.
Yeah.
Most definitely. Because, I mean, that was part of the reason I would get so bored sometimes when I was watching, like, the movies that my mom had approved for me and shit. Like, again, The Littlest Viking and stuff like that. It's just, they're slow. They're quiet. There's not, like, action and adventure and flashy bright colors. And you have to kind of get used to the fact that sometimes you just need to listen.
Right.
And not just watch.
Once a Selkie finds her fight again, she goes, she must return to the sea.
Yeah.
And of course, there's the seal, and that's and again, the seals, you don't see seals like this. You don't, you know, that's interesting to watch. And those eyes, and just...
Oh, absolutely. The people who had the animal trainers in this movie are flipping fantastic.
Oh, yeah. And you haven't even started yet. Trust me. Okay. The owner chains of love and keep them from the sea.
Aww. And yeah, I know we're being really quiet right now, but I really feel like it kind of matches the tempo of the moody.
Mm-hmm.
I said moody. I was trying to say movie, but then moody came out, and it also kind of fit.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, and you have to... So John Sayles is an American writer, an American filmmaker. He finds this novel that he adapts, goes to Ireland, finds Irish actors to do it. There are no American actors in this film. And you don't see these faces. You don't. So you get to a point where there's none of that recognition. So you just accept them for who and what they are and what they say. And it makes the film even more traditional and understanding.
Yeah, I think I can definitely see that. You know, it's one of those ones that, like you said, you know, you definitely have to have your fucking subtitles on, because ain't no way you're going to be understanding what these folk are saying.
Yeah.
But also, it's one you have to watch a couple of times, because these stories are full of so much symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
And movies like this are also important, because a lot of people seem to forget that this is the only way that these stories get told anymore. We no longer do the word of mouth storytelling. We document it. We put it down in writing. We put it down on film. We do whatever we can to document it permanently. And if there wasn't somebody out there documenting and telling these stories right now, it's very likely that they would have already been just, like, eradicated from human memory.
Well, you know,
and that would be an absolute travesty.
Don't forget that. You know, there are always books, too. Now, these days, we want to see films, you know. But a lot of my favorite fantasy films are about storytelling.
Yeah.
There's this one. There's The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. There's The Fall, which is a great little film. And I love films about storytelling.
Exactly. And storytelling is a really important art, because it is something that is dying. It's being replaced by basically the reality TV of storytelling, which is podcasting. Now, I'm not saying anything against podcasting. Obviously, I'm kind of a podcaster here. But
kind of?
I mean, maybe a little bit. I dabble in it once in a while.
You're my girl, Nadia.
So, yeah, I'm like, I got my beginnings in podcasting actually from doing storytelling on the radio. Mm-hmm. In junior high, it was my first recording, and I got picked for a national syndicate thing that was doing for the public broadcasting stations like NPR and all that stuff. I got picked out of like 10 students in the nation to tell a story that was going to be played on the radio for future upcoming casts for children's storytelling show that they had. And I told the story of the plan of God, and it was amazing. And I realized then that I really liked talking to people and telling them interesting things.
Well, I used to, at our library in Bradford, once a month I would go down and read to the kids and tell stories. And also, remember Paulella? We had her on.
My tea lady, I love her, yes.
Yeah. Paulella had a woodwind quintet, or quartet it was, excuse me. And we did Peter and the Wolf, and I was they had me as the narrator. So I did that too. I love telling stories.
Well, and that I ended up, you know, later becoming, I was in competitive drama, and our yearly, my school, our drama group did these kids, like children's Halloween shows, and I directed a few of those. And one year it was all different Mother Goose stories. And so it was literally a storytelling play that we set up. And for our backdrop, because we had to make it mobile and portable, we had a giant storybook. And
okay,
we would just
let's get back to the movie because this is quite a visual.
Yes.
Now, these days, if you saw a young toddler running naked, you might have problems with that, and maybe you still do, but it's done in such a way it's extremely tasteful, and you understand why.
Yeah, I mean, they're not trying to show naked kids here. That's not the point of this.
But, you know, the other thing I really like about this film is that we do have a female protagonist. And, of course, this is the month, Women's History Month.
Yes, that was part of the reason we decided on this one.
And the other thing, too, is how often do you see young performers? And, you know, they do a good job, but they don't seem realistic. Right? They seem to know their acting.
Oh, yeah.
That's not the case here.
No.
That is not the case. By the way, you will hear me crunching on some pork rinds right now.
Oh, I don't doubt it. It's kind of hard not to when you've got those at your house.
Mm-hmm. So they're going to be forced off where they live, and they have to go into the city.
Okay, yeah, well, that sucks.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, the fog is something.
Oh, God, yeah. I've always wondered how people survive in areas like that. It seems like in Arkansas, I don't know how it is in Memphis yet, but as soon as any amount of fog hits, suddenly nobody can drive ever again. Definitely. What is that? A pea soup fog there?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am kind of getting bored with the fog here, but still cool.
So the seals are pushing her toward the island. And there, you're done with the fog now. But the cinematography, again, he's using the fog to silhouette.
Oh, yeah. I know. They're using it as a really interesting visual, and I totally get it. But it's one of those things that they took a really big risk filming this long in this kind of fog.
Also, now you can consider it part of a, like an analogy. You can consider it an analogy. She doesn't know what's happening. There's fog, and suddenly she's on the island, and it's clear.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that is a major part of a lot of stories and storytelling, is that whole, like, fugue state, getting to the place kind of thing, and then suddenly you're there, and it's like, oh, look, we're the island of clarity, but really it's like fog. Senses, because it's bad. It's enchanted.
Have a nice cheese sandwich at a nice little stream like that and on a gorgeous island.
Yeah, that would be the best cheese sandwich ever. Is that caiman bear? So many flowers. Pretty, pretty
puppies,
flowers.
Puppies. Sorry.
Yeah, you knew
I had to go there. Yeah. They even have a crab wrangler in the film, too, by the way.
I see that. That's kind of awesome, though. Imagine being the person that has to train crabs. Like, how does that even fucking work?
I don't know.
Poor Darkling Naked Baby.
Yeah. I mean, just think
and
of that.
And his seal friend.
Yeah. Now, think about it. You're filming a young kid in a little bassinet like that. That's out at sea. How much do you think, you know, you have to do to make it safe?
We have to think about back to when this was filmed and how much they really cared about safety standards. I mean, come on. Let's talk Wicker Man. They really set that shit on fire.
Yeah, but let's
also with people and animals in it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But in this film, they have 12 divers, safety divers that are accredited. They of course also. Oh yeah.
I was not aware of that.
They also have a number of educators, too, tutors. Which, of course, they have
for the kids on set?
Yeah.
Now, that they did have to do back in the day. Like, that's always been a thing as far as child actors are concerned. Well, not always, because obviously Judy Garland was, you know, fucked over hard by Hollywood. But, but I think hers was, you know, one of the shining examples of we really need some regulations. But I think it's great that they, you know, actually credit them as part of the movie staff because that doesn't always happen.
Having tea with the little seal.
Yep. Okay, the seals are just killing me in this. I'm sorry. I love them. I want to squish them. I have a feeling that they're not as squishy as we think they would be. They're probably a lot firmer, but I still want to poke it. And I can attest to this. That is what a normal child's long hair looks like. Okay. But yeah, I don't care how much you brush it or anything else. And you see, somebody obviously tried to put a barrette in it this morning. It's not there. Well, I mean, it's there. It's just like halfway down her head, and all the rest of her hair is like fucking barrette. Whatever, Beretta, I shoot you. Long, pretty hair on little children is God's idea of an adorable fucking joke. But for some reason...
My sister had really long hair.
Yeah, my five-year-old... Now, my 13-year-old had long hair for many, many years, and I always joked because of how much they hated getting it cut that they needed to cut it all off. And no. And finally they got older and were like, oh, yeah, cut it all off. Five-year-old wants to be Rapunzel, like Fiona here in the movie. And it's a struggle. Not even going to lie. I am not the captain of the struggle bus anymore. It is the struggle freight train with this hair. Fuck long hair on the girl. Cut it all off.
One Halloween, my sister took me out. I was about 12 years old. She was 15. And so she was a little old to go out trick-or-treating. But I talked her into being Cousin It. And all we did was flip her hair over her eyes, put sunglasses on, and I would lead her to the houses.
Yeah, I can't do it. Can't do it. I'm working on it. If anybody has any tips or tricks, send them to me, please.
This relationship is really cool.
And does he not, like, passingly, like every time you just glance and not like actually look at it, but he looks like Adrian Brody.
Yeah, a little bit.
He's just very Adrian Brody.
By the way, you know how I am when I'm on the phone.
So yeah. I like walk back and forth, you know, in front of the TV. So I keep glancing at him and not just looking at his face. And every time I glance past, I'm like, hey, that. No, this movie is too old for that to be him.
By the way, I love those hats. I could wear those hats.
Oh, I do too. I think those are amazing hats. Everybody needs a hat like that. Because just about anybody can pull one of those off. I've never dug for clams before, but I just think it would be, like, really awesome.
Oh, I agree.
You've never been either?
No, I've never dug clams. I'm not real fond of the water.
Okay. I didn't know that. I love the water, but I don't like sand. Better get to digging faster. Yep.
They're not digging. They're doing something else. You'll see. They're cleaning
up
the cottage.
Oh, yeah, they're trying to fix up the cabins and shit. Yeah, I forgot. Sorry.
And again,
I'd rather them be clam gigging.
I could listen to this music all day.
Being in the SBA, I have had days where I've listened to this kind of music all day. It's not bad.
True. No. And here you have the actual song, the Selke song. I got to turn this up a little bit, okay? Forgive me.
You go for it. It's good music.
That's a lot of freaking work.
Oh, it is. You ever macheted bushes down?
Yes, I
that
have.
Shit
that
shit is not as easy as it looks like.
No, fuck no. Whoops. I forgot this is a family film.
Yeah, I know. I've been forgetting, too, but I don't think I've said anything too untoward.
I think we both have one F word on, yeah.
We both dropped an F bomb. Well, you know what? That's family friendly as far as I'm freaking concerned, because even Deadpool with Disney got an F bomb. Yeah, no, I'm not going to lie. A good Irish jig gets me every time, man. Every time.
Yeah.
They're just fun. I mean, if that doesn't make you want to jump around and dance a little bit.
No, absolutely.
Well, I understand if you have things that make you uncomfortable dancing, but, you know, the chair dancing is still there.
Well, chair dancing. I do a lot of chair dancing.
Yeah, the only time I do any actual dancing is usually cooking either Sunday breakfast or dinner. And then I blast my music in the kitchen and get rowdy, but... Goddamn seagulls.
Again.
No, that is not what happened. Look at how fat and happy he looks. That was a very self-satisfied bird.
I could see you doing it. What my muscles?
Well, my five-year-old does that constantly. Look at my muscles. They are huge muscles, baby. You even got muscles in that thumb. Look at that. Sorry, she's still stuffing her face with cheddar popcorn and giving me a very muscular thumbs up.
The only thing about this whole segment, this montage, is child labor laws, man.
The what?
That's a
oh,
lot
child
of
labor laws?
Work.
Actually, child labor laws get relaxed for work on a family farm. Coming from a farming state, I know all those kind of laws. You can actually get a hardship license at, like, 14 years old if you work on a farm for your family. Just so that you can legally drive the tractors and shit. And, you know, the bullshit of daylight savings time was invented for farming families so that the kids could
it
to school during daylight hours. So, yeah.
And the seals, man. This just absolutely fascinates me, this film. The work that was put into this film. Grandfather not happy.
She's so tired she didn't even eat her potato. What is wrong with you, Irish kid? There is something wrong. She did not eat her potatoes. I think the pod people have her. I mean, I don't eat potatoes for a couple of days, and, like, I start to feel it in my blood and bones. Ah, they were making whitewash.
Yep.
Which is very different than actual paint.
Yes.
And this is why Tom and Huck were so pissed off, because, like, it was going to take him forever, because with whitewash you have to do multiple coats, and I'm not just talking about two. You've got to do, like, four of it to get it to look like anything decent, because it literally is just a wash, and you have to build it up.
Right. Look at that.
I mean, Habitat for Humanity much? Look at that shit.
So if you haven't figured it out, the Selkie is her mother.
Well, yeah, I kind of gathered that. Another astute observation from the five-year-old. Watching the mom, she goes, "Mom, it looks like something's up with her face." I was like, "Okay." And she goes, "Like she's haunted or something."
Yep.
That's some good acting. Just her facials alone. Even a 5-year-old was like, that woman is haunted.
Yeah. You know, the other thing too is how much of this movie is in complete silence.
Well, yeah, I've noticed that because we've been maintaining a lot of silence during this episode, and I keep trying to apologize for it, but this is such a conservatively quiet movie.
And I do think it's really appropriate for St. Patty's.
Oh, 100%. And honestly, the brogue in this one isn't too bad. Like, I can actually, you know, hear what's going on for the most part and understand without the subtitles, even though I do have them on.
By the way, I've warned Rachel, and I'm going to basically warn everyone that's listening to this commentary. When we get to the end of this movie, if I'm not a blubbering sack of tears, there is something wrong.
I'm pretty sure from what I know about the end of this movie that if you're not a blubbering sack of tears, or, you know, maybe if you're not a crier, you don't feel some at least heart pulls, you've probably got shit where your soul hole is supposed to be. Oh. talking mushrooms, that's what I meant. That's my abbreviation for fungus.
I love Grandma too.
Oh yeah, Grandma's fantastic. But she's like your typical, you know, Irish Catholic matron.
Yeah.
She's the matriarch of the family, and, you know, they're always, like, sneaking off behind her back and doing stuff that they know is going to upset her. She's like, love you anyway, but screw you guys.
I knew all along anyway.
I hate rowing boats, by the way. I've never told you this, but I hate it.
And that damn seagull.
I know. He reminds me of my porch, or not my porch, but my window fence squirrel. We've named him Fat Gus. So I think we're going to have to call the seagull Fat Gus because he looks at me like that. I'll send you some pictures of him. He poses.
Cool.
And it looks like that seagull poses.
Mm-hmm. God, and those seals have such eyes.
They're so expressive. Ooh, seaweed soup. Well, and the cool thing about, like, these, I think, that seeing vintage cooking and recipes and stuff, and I have gone all the way back to the Middle Ages and maybe a little before with some of my cooking, is so fascinating. Like, the reason that they're using the seaweed in there is because it also, like, A, it's, like, healthy as crap, tastes pretty good, and it's got a lot of salt in it because it's been cured in salt water its entire existence.
Right.
So seaweed is a really good base for a soup stock because of the saltiness and all of its massive health benefits. But look at that beautiful window. So are the rocks, like, I guess, weighting the thatched roof down? What
exactly
are they? Okay.
No, exactly. That's what it is. They're weights.
Okay.
The seals all come to see that they're back.
Mm-hmm. It's like he knows how to steer it now.
Yeah.
They're charging him back onto the island.
Yeah. Those seals are friggin' trained, kid.
Poor baby. Come on, kid. And I mean, he's still got all the baby chub.
Yeah.
I can't be so sad for him, though, because look at those seals. They're so funny. Floppy, 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 floppy.
Blurp, 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 blurp.
I mean, that's like the definition of a blurp right there.
Yeah.
And a derp. And that kid was like, fuck all y'all.
Okay, I got tears.
No. And they're going to protect the island of the seals and take care of the chubby little baby Jamie. And oh, my God, just blurp, blurp, blurp.
That looks really good. Yeah.
Sorry, I've been like really craving some hearty whole grain loaf right now. And that bread just fell. And the seals are still going to be the protectors of the island. But now
exactly.
Their people are back. And there we go. So, yes, that is just a beautiful, sweet, and I mean, like, again, like I said, there's not even some, like, major evil bro in it. Yeah, they're, like, getting kicked out of their house or whatever, but that happened to everybody back in the day. Yeah. No, it's just a good, sweet story of stories.
Yeah, it's a story about stories. And about
belief,
too.
Hey, and I think there
too.
Needs to be more of those in the world.
I agree.
I mean,
and again,
I don't know
I
if you remember.
Really... What? Go
oh,
ahead.
Yeah, keep going.
Notice the goals trained and the assistant call trainers and the seals and the seal trainers, the animatronics, particularly for the Selkie thing. But the one thing I do have to say is if you like this film, please check out the films of John Sayles, who directed this. You know, some of them are more adult. This is one true family film, but they're all about people and about situations and about, you know, what we all go through. And I love this film. I mean, this might not be my favorite of Sayles films, but it's in my top five easily.
Well, you know, I'm not as familiar with his work, so I'm going to say, you know, just to be devil's advocate, it's my favorite of his films.
I can tell you this, we'll do Honey Dripper too. We'll do Honey Dripper because I love that film also.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm always up for something new and interesting.
Absolutely. And the Brother from Another Planet too, which I just love. But you notice all these traditional things that Mason Daring arranged.
Oh, yeah. Actually, the music probably was one of the best parts of this movie. I mean, not that it wasn't a good movie, but...
It coalesces everything. It reinforces the Irish setting and everything. And of course,
oh,
we
yeah,
are 100%. Celebrating St. Patty's Day.
And Women's History Month. So, female protagonist from an older movie. Yeah, I mean, like, it ticks all the boxes for right now. So, yeah, that was a great pick, honestly, Carl. And I you know, I was thinking that it sounded really, really familiar, but I do not think I have seen this movie before, honestly. I think it was maybe just the fact that it was about, you know, a few traditional Irish stories that made me feel like it was familiar to me. But no, it's not. I don't think I've seen this one at all.
You know, and the other thing is one of the things that truly I think is unique about this film is I mentioned it before, but our young Fiona, the actress, there's no
pretense.
That's
our only
there.
Credit.
That's our only credit. That's your
I don't
only
like that.
Credit.
I mean, she was fantastic.
No, she didn't. You know, she was cast, and then maybe she didn't want to do it anymore. You know, she was very young. And how many?
I guess.
How
I
many
mean, I know that's
really
true.
Make it into adult acting. No,
and
she's like,
you're
what?
Right. That's true. Like, I get it, but man, she was so wonderful in that, and it's just, you know, it's sad when a talent like that is I feel underrepresented. And maybe she's like happy and wonderful and living her life doing what she actually wants to do, which is obviously not acting. So there's that. That they sought out a lot of local people, so maybe this was just some random local kid.
Yeah, just an amazing performance by her, and so natural. And I think that's the thing that really hits me about this film, is that there's no pretense. It doesn't like she's not like acting to me. She's just
well,
being
I don't. Think
herself.
It felt like she was acting because she was doing something that was so natural for her age.
Right.
This is what I was doing at that age, running around not, you know, a beautiful fucking Irish island, but I was running through my country-ass neighborhood, climbing trees and reading books for hours and, you know, doing my own damn thing and making up stories and asking other people to tell me stories. And yeah, so I don't necessarily feel like this was really an acting gig for the kids.
No, that's the whole point. It's so natural. And you know what? That's true of almost everybody in that thing. I mean, they're actors, but it felt real.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it felt real, I just adore that film. I have ever since I've seen it, and to me, it's the perfect film for St. Patty's Day. So I'm glad that everyone joined us for this, and I'm so glad you liked it too.
Oh, absolutely.
And I do
have a penchant for actually watchable family flicks. I'm not talking about movies like Cats and Dogs and shit like that. Like, stuff like this is timeless.
Mm-hmm.
Like, absolutely. And I can show this to my kids and we can all bond over it because honestly, I mean, this movie's from 95. It came out when I was a kid.
Right.
You know? So these are things that I can show my family and be like, hey, this is the kind of movies I grew up on, you know? It wasn't always guns and violence.
No. No, and there's something accessible. I mean, you get things like Anne of Green Gables and Pippi Longstockings and those films, which I grew up with, you know, with the wonderful world of Disney. But I didn't connect to those.
Yeah, I
but
didn't
this one I did.
Really either. I didn't connect with Pippi because she was just, like, too brazen and out there and all that good shit. And I didn't like the Anne of Green Gables. I mean, we discussed that on a show recently even, that, you know, I wasn't into those shows, Little House on the Prairie, like these demure, you know, quiet shows about, you know, how dramatic life can be when you decide to make it all about your family kind of stuff. It's not my bag, yo. My life is dramatic because I made it all about my family, but it's not the quiet drama that you see people quietly living out on the prairie plains. And yeah, no, I'm not into that.
And this was a bit of a mystery, too. Let's not forget that.
That is
true. And a little bit of fantasy and what happened and why and so on and so forth. And it's all about the resolve of that young lady, of Fiona. And she's the one who is the, you know, the lynch point. She's the one who figures it all out because she is Fiona.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that. I love it.
I'll have to look it up more, but I do remember from my baby naming escapades, my first child was named after a Gaelic goddess. And when my second child came around, I was like, well, let's see if there's a way we can stick with the theme. If there's something, you know, that I like, cool. And so my second child ended up being named after a Gaelic goddess as well. And I cannot remember which one Fiona is, but that was one of our options that we kind of had to 86 because obviously Shrek has happened in my lifetime. So
right.
Can't name a kid Fiona, but there's a lot more to this movie. And that's what I was saying earlier. It's one that I'm definitely going to have to watch a second time. And I think anybody who's not just like a scholar of Gaelic history or some shit, Norse mythology or whatever, probably have to do the same thing, look into it. But I know that Fiona was a goddess, and I think if we look into this, we'll find some interesting correlations between what kind of goddess she was.
Well, you know what? Let's just try this very, very quickly. Let me try something here. Okay.
Okay, so I have a feeling I know what you're doing, and awesome. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's just giving me, it's giving me just names right now, people, famous people. I'll have to look at it and see if I can find more information.
I'll go to the places where, you know, I was looking at the definitions of my kids' names and things. Because, you know, one of them, their name basically means goddess of the light and the wind.
Okay.
And the other name means blessed raven of the air.
Uh-huh. So let me, at this point, we're getting close to two hours here, and I need to go to bed.
Housekeeping.
But we're going to do housekeeping at this point. So tomorrow, we continue our celebration of St. Paddy's Day with Brockton Town Radio with TC, and it's going to be a playlist of nothing but Irish bands. So there you go. Okay, on Monday, it's a very special day for us. I will be attending the New York City Science Fiction Film Festival on Saturday, October 25th. And we have Daniel, just a moment, let me get his name, just a moment, so that I get it right. We have Daniel Abella, who is the founder and director of the New York City Science Fiction Film Festival, will be with us on Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Wednesday at 2 p.m. In the afternoon, Rachel and Vicki and I will be doing part two of Kick-Ass Women in Film and TV, and this is 2000 to the present. And then on Thursday, we have our Women's History Commentary Watch. Rachel and I will be watching Hidden Figures, which is about a group of women mathematicians who were integral a part of the 1969 moon landing. And we'll be watching that on Thursday. And that's what we're going to do so far. So that's what we've got for next week. And who knows, we may throw something in on Tuesday too. And we'll see what happens there. All right. So that's what we got. Anything else as far as you know, Miss Rachel?
No, I think we're all good here.
All right. Well, folks, it's time for me to say goodnight because I have church tomorrow and I need to get to bed. So thank you very much. Yes, we know, 90 seconds. So we want to just say goodnight, and we'll see you tomorrow with PC at 8 p.m. And good night, everyone. Say goodnight, Rach.
Thanks for all the fish.
Absolutely. Don't let the bed bugs bite. Good night.